You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Over 30 years ago, one of the biggest wine scams in U.S. history rocked the Central Valley. The scandal involved the most popular wine at the time, White Zinfandel, and centered around millions of dollars worth of wine grape fraud.
You can imagine this, a couple of regulatory agents sitting in a truck at the crack of dawn, watching the fields being harvested.
Yeah, because they were able to identify the grapes in the field, follow the trucks.
And then, after tailing the trucks, they wrote down the delivery times at each winery and reviewed the winery's paperwork.
And they could see that the variety had been changed from what they knew was in the field versus what showed up at the winery.
And that is a clip of the new podcast, Blood Vines, which dropped today. The series explores the history of this scam, which included the murder of a key witness and led to the downfall of a California wine dynasty. Chris Walker is an investigative journalist and the host of Blood Vines and joins us now. Welcome.
Thanks, Vicky. It's a pleasure to be here.
So of all the podcasts to do, you wanted to do this scam, and which is a true crime podcast. How did this come onto your radar?
Gosh, and there are so many podcasts out there. Yes, this story came about through a chance conversation that I had at a holiday gathering in California. One of the party guests was retiring after 50 years in the wine business, and I had the idea to ask him, hey, what were some of the more memorable things that happened during a 5-decade career? He mentioned a few things which I can no longer remember, but the one that certainly caught my attention was widespread grape mislabeling happening all throughout California's Central Valley, starting in the late 1980s, as well as the murder of a government witness right before he was set to testify. And I thought, geez, I hadn't even heard of the fraud part of that story. And it certainly caught my interest, and turns out there was a lot there to uncover.
Yeah, this almost entirely focuses on the Sacramento Central Valley. Tell us about this region and the impact that it has on the wine industry.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, when you hear California and wine, most people think of Sonoma and Napa, but the Central Valley produces far more grapes than those two other regions, albeit usually lower quality grapes, but a lot of those end up in mass-produced wines. And so the setup for this fraud that happened in the 1980s, you mentioned it earlier, was around the best-selling wine at the time, which was this sweet rosé called White Zinfandel, which, funny enough, this year is actually the 50th anniversary of its creation. And it became so popular that it led to some supply-side issues that I can discuss if you're interested.
Yeah, White Zinfandel was both my abuela and my grandma's favorite wine growing up. And so I know that they were not alone in the 80s and 90s for drinking White Zinfandel. Let's just first explain what White Zinfandel is and how it differs from the traditional red and white varieties.
Sure. Well, funny enough, White Zinfandel was created by mistake. It was actually what put the winery Sutter Home on the map. So in 1975, the winemaker there, Bob Trinquero, was actually trying to make, or he was making a traditional red Zinfandel. This is a red wine. And he was using a process called saignée, which in French means to bleed. And so you take some of the juice to concentrate, you know, the skins and the color and the red wine you're making. And winemakers can use that runoff juice to create rosé. So he was fermenting this batch of rosé and the fermentation got stuck, meaning the sugar stopped converting to alcohol. So he ended up with this wine that was half fermented and very sweet. Some might say has hints of Jolly Rancher. And he decided, you know what, I don't want this to be a total loss. I'm just going to bottle this anyway and see if anyone buys it. Well, lo and behold, as one wine writer put it to me, Americans talk dry, but they drink sweet. And so this soon became the top-selling wine in the United States. It's a very sweet rosé, and you can still find it today.
Oh, yeah, you definitely can. So how did a scam surrounding White Zinfandel come to be? Why didn't they just produce lots of it since it was so popular?
They did produce lots of it. So Trinchero and Sutter Home had the foresight when they saw that this was flying off shelves to see that this was going to become a huge product for them. And so they made a very smart decision in that they worked with vineyards across California, including in the Central Valley, to buy up as much Zinfandel as they could possibly get their hands on. And so they actually ended up avoiding the fraud that would happen later. So other wineries, including Beringer and Mondavi, had sort of thumbed their nose at White Zinfandel. But then eventually they were like, okay, we have to get in on this as well. Well, now Sutter Home had bought up so much Zinfandel around the state that all of these other wineries, and eventually there would be 51 that were producing White Zinfandel, they had to source whatever Zinfandel was left in the state. So as I put it in the podcast, it was an industry-wide fight for scraps, and the price of Zinfandel went up tenfold.
Right, supply and demand. So
right.
There is a rule around wine. I remember learning this wine tasting one time, that in order for a bottle to be called, say, Cabernet, some 75% of the grapes need to be Cabernet, but the remaining 25% don't have to be. So how does that come into play with White Zinfandel and maybe kind of like fudging the books a little bit when it comes to the variety of grape that you're using?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yes, this actually happened right before this fraud took place and sort of sets the scene for this. So in 1983, California, and this was mostly marketing, but it ended up working beautifully for California, to label a wine by its grape type. And this is how most of us understand wines today. So if you see a bottle that's, you know, labeled Chardonnay, or you see a bottle that's labeled Merlot, in 1983, the state made a change where to be varietally labeled, you have to have at least 75% of that type of grape in the bottle. The previous benchmark was 51%. Now, Zinfandel had Zinfandel on the label, so it also had to have at least 75% Zinfandel grapes. But as I mentioned earlier, you had this situation where the price had gone from $100 or $200 a ton to more than $1,000 a ton. And Sutter Home had set the price for what most people expected to pay for White Zinfandel, which was, you know, $3
a
bottle.
Not that much. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you can see the dilemma is like, how do you make a cheap mass-produced wine when the ingredient, the central ingredient that you're required by the state to have 75% of at least in your bottle, has suddenly gone up tenfold?
Yeah. And there have been other types of wine fraud in the past, maybe selling a fake expensive bottle. But this one is different. We're going to listen to a clip from one of the prosecutors that you have in your podcast describing how big of a scam that this was.
It wasn't just the fact that it involved wine, but I could see that it involved a fraud on a pretty large scale in terms of the amount of wine and grapes that were being moved, but also dollar amount, a multi-million dollar fraud.
Yeah, and some of the biggest players you highlight in the podcast are members of the Licciardi family, which you describe as one of California's wine dynasties. Who are they?
Yeah, so the patriarch of this family, Jack Licciardi, was one of California's most prominent grape brokers. Now, this was a role that I didn't even know existed before I started reporting this story, because it's a bit of a behind-the-scenes role in the wine industry. A grape broker is a deal maker that facilitates deals between wineries and vineyards or farmers. So, you know, Some wineries own their own vineyards, but many wineries actually buy grapes from independent farmers. So they use these grape brokers to negotiate those deals. And Jack was among the best connected and best known in the entire state.
Well, let's listen to one of the prosecutors again describing the family dynamics within the Licciardi family.
One of the problems that Michael Licciardi faced was he had to pull a fast one on his father, Jack Licciardi, who was the owner of the company and who never would have entered into a scheme like this. So he had to create these companies that were fictitious.
Okay, so he had to pull a fast one on his dad. What happened to Jack?
Well, we just heard the other name that was thrown out there, Michael. Michael was one of Jack's sons who was in the business with him. And he was one of the people involved in these grape shenanigans. And as the prosecutor mentioned, Jack Licciardi, who was this real old school honor, you know, honor is the most important virtue type of businessman, would never have engaged in a scheme like this. So Michael had to create fake names for businessmen to sign contracts, fake vineyard names, also that his dad wouldn't find out that he was facilitating the movement of thousands of pounds of mislabeled grapes heading to numerous wineries.
And unfortunately, Jack, the murderer in your podcast is Jack, correct?
That is correct. Yeah. Jumping ahead, eventually, you know, this becomes a big federal case. It sort of sends shockwaves all throughout California's wine industry. And it was first the state authorities, because there were state cases and federal cases. The state asked Jack to testify as their central witness in one of the cases. And they were in the process of scheduling his deposition when he ended up murdered in his living room in Stockton with a single .22 caliber bullet to the head.
Wow. Let's take a listen to some of the reactions to Jack's murder.
I was sitting in my family room watching the evening news, and a spot came on about a murder.
I mean, obviously we were all speculating what happened.
Rumors swirled among the various criminal justice agencies. As you might recall, Steve Lapham saying,
I don't know where we heard this, but he was murdered with a .22 caliber bullet to the head, which is a very mafia-type way of doing it.
This must have just shocked and shaped the communities in the Central Valley. I mean, this is a well-known family. We're talking about wine, which is part of agriculture, and something like this happening must have been truly shocking.
Absolutely. The theme that I keep returning to throughout the podcast is trust. I mean, you have these very tight-knit farming communities, as you mentioned, who would do these large deals with nothing more than a handshake. And so, you know, first you had this situation where you had various rings of bad actors betraying the trust of longtime business partners to pull one over on them, sell them mislabeled grapes. And then you had this mysterious murder, which turned into a 4-year murder investigation. And so there was a complete breakdown of trust there as people were trying to figure out who was behind the murder.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to investigative journalist Chris Walker about his new podcast called Blood Vines, which explores one of the largest wine scams in U.S. history that happened in the Central Valley. And his podcast just dropped today. Was it hard to find people to open up and talk to you on the record for this?
It was somewhat. It's a very sensitive story, involves, you know, a good deal of trauma. So I felt that it was really important to spend time in the Central Valley, meet people face to face, build that trust with them. And eventually I found that, you know, there was so much that was sort of left unexplored and unsaid around this whole situation that I started making discoveries. And some people decided to participate in the podcast just because they were so astounded at what I was finding and they wanted to know more and they had been wondering about this for 30 plus years. And I was very fortunate that multiple members of the Licciardi family also agreed to go on the record and unpack this story for me.
I mean, this rocked the Central Valley. This happened 30 years ago. Why has this story not been told in full like this before?
You know, it falls into a category of, at least when it comes to reporters, I think I can answer that question. It happened over quite a long period of time. I mean, the fraud part was at least 4 or 5 years. And then I mentioned the murder investigation was 4 years. And so when I first started looking into the story, I found little bits and pieces of reporting spread out over all of that time. You know, single newspaper articles that would, you know, explain one little development. But no one had sort of zoomed out and taken the entire situation into context at the same time and stitched together how it all happened. And, you know, it really sort of, it was something that original tipster, the wine retiree, told me, you know, like, we've always wondered how these two events, the fraud and the murder, were linked. And it turns out they absolutely were linked. And no one had asked that question before.
How did this change the wine industry in California?
In positive ways, actually. You know, there were multiple wineries indicted. There were multiple circles of players involved, and they ended up with fairly stiff penalties. There were a couple wine executives who had to step down from being the president of their companies. There were a couple individuals who went to jail. And so it really did send a message, according to current winemakers that I interviewed and remember this situation well, sending a message that you can't engage in those kinds of shenanigans because you could really pay a price. And there are a couple other things that changed too. The tracking of grapes now all happens electronically and is a lot more secure than it was when they were writing down, you know, grape names on paper slips when this was happening. And even if there is doubt about what sort of grapes ended up in a particular wine, today you can analyze that wine and look for DNA markers, which will tell you what kind of grapes are actually in it. So there's a lot more safeguards in place now than there were in the go-go 80s.
Wow, you have some like wine forensics now, looking at the DNA of the varietal. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. You don't even have to drink wine to enjoy this podcast.
Yeah, you don't, but it might be more enjoyable if you do.
Yeah, maybe with the glass while you're listening. Chris Walker is an investigative journalist and the host of the new podcast, Blood Vines. The series details one of the largest wine scams in U.S. history, which happened here in the Central Valley, and it just dropped today. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.